Welcome to Season 6, Episode 10 of the Public Relations Podcast. And I've got a really good one for you today. This is with Komal Lot from Toot Consult in Mumbai, India. And what is so fascinating talking to Komal is about how she has to work in a market where there are so many different niches, so many different cultural groups, so many different languages, so many things she has to think about in terms of targeting her PR and getting her message correct. And it's the kind of strategies that she shares in there, which I think can be applied to PR efforts anywhere in the world. But it is such an interesting marketplace that it's the way she's learned to deal with it and her strategies and techniques. I think you're going to find absolutely fascinating. There's just one thing I do need to warn you about, though, and the sound quality was really not good, unfortunately. So I've tried to clean it up as much as possible, but you're going to find it's going to sound really quite tinny at times. But you should be able to hear then, which is the main thing, because there is so much in this episode. I just had to get this across to you. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Is 2024 the year when PR firms should advise their clients to keep quiet? Does social media actually work for PR? And what data should you be looking at in 2024? Welcome to the Public Relations Podcast. I'll be discussing these stories and more with the amazing Komal Lot, recognized as one of Asia's top PRs and marketers by a whole bunch of organizations, as we're about to find out in just a few moments' time. Stay with us for that.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Midson.
One of the things I love about this show is the range of people we get to talk to. Last week, we were talking to Kathleen Decente about her work with major corporations and how viewing things from a big organization point of view in-house can often be different to how smaller organizations or small agencies or medium-sized agencies work. And there was still so much so that you could learn from getting a different perspective on things. Well, today, we're doing something I've been wanting to do for a very long time now, because so far, as you probably noticed on the show, we've been speaking mainly to people in Europe and America. A lot of these people have been reaching out, but as I think you know by now, I think PR is very much a global thing. And the best way to understand people and to understand the techniques and ideas that are going on is to talk to people around the world. So I hope this is the start of many conversations that we're going to have with people outside of those sort of traditional areas to get new ideas and new perspectives, which is why I could not be happier to get on someone I've been waiting for to talk to for a long, long time. From Mumbai, India, is Komal Lot. A very good morning to you, Komal. It is very early for you, isn't it?
A very good morning. Let's just say this was a night bender, so I'm good with it.
Come on, just explain for people listening in what happened here, because we've had to reschedule a couple of times, and the time we've ended up with is very PR, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think you said it right. When there's a will, there's a way, and if that's 3:30 a.m. here, it is bound to be. Yes, I think we did reschedule a couple of times with our schedules, and then when I did use the calendar, I realized it's 3:30 a.m. instead of a p.m. You were very gracious to send me another one, but I'm like, let's do it. I don't think it's a better time. Let's just make it happen.
You know, one of the things, I want you to tell people about you, a little bit about you in a moment, but one of the things that I like about you is you've got so much energy. And I love asking some of my guests that just seem to have this buzz about them the whole time. What's your secret? Come on.
I think I'm just an optimist bias. Like, I just have that optimism bias. You cannot survive PR without it, right? You cannot survive.
Yes,
it's a professional hazard as well, because if not this, then that. If not that, then this and that. And there are permutations, combinations you just come up with. So the energy is bound just more to do with also you, Richard. You bring out the vibrations.
Oh, no. We're talking about you this time. I'm interested in you. I mean, but what... You know, we all have down days in communications. There are those days where things don't work. I mean, let's be honest. But what do you find is your mindset when you get into that moment?
It's been 13 years running a company and 22 years of being in the business. There are enough dark days. I mean, I had a extremely hectic and extremely stressful day today, toggling many things. But what one perhaps does is that you just wear so many hats by the second, not even by a minute anymore, that you just are programmed to doing the switching on and switching off, which is not very healthy, by the way, but I think we chose to do it that way. So you program yourselves to do it that way and have enough downtime. I do go diving quite a bit because that sort of gives you the serenity. But I think it's just a professional way of conducting that you got to make it happen, and you make it happen. You cannot dole out of the situation then.
I remember the first time we actually spoke, we ended up talking about diving, and it's not something that I've ever done before. And I think that's a great way of doing something whereby you can't touch a computer.
Yeah,
you cannot. Can't pick up your phone, can you?
You cannot, because you are only by yourself, and therefore it's you and the water and your manager's breathing. That's what it is.
Best way to relax. Komal, tell everyone about you. Just give us a little bit of a background, because you've done so much. It's going to take a long time. So give us the TLDR.
Oh, all right then. That's going to be in a nutshell. I started off as an internship with my college when I was 18, and what came a summer job. I think the organization and us had a great synergy and sync going. So they allowed me to do my professional commitments alongside college. So 7 to 11 a.m., I would go to college, and then in my Walkman, walk in, completing and working with some of the most interesting brands. And it was fascinating. The whole storytelling exercise back then with fax machines and no Blackberries, no pagers, just a desktop, to being able to transition a couple of jobs and 7 years of working, and then starting Toot, which is I would say a connected communications agency. I like that word because today it's storytelling across so many mediums, right?
I want to talk to you about that, yeah.
It's transcended from simple print, television, electronic, to social media, Reddit, HubSpot, Sprout, podcast. It's alarming, beautiful, exciting. It's like Harry Potter's maze right now. The more you dig, the more you go, you're just going to get a scene there.
That's what's so fascinating about it today, though, isn't it? Because I think in the past, it was just you come up with a story, you write a press release, you pester some journalists, you try and get them to run it, and then you do it again. And it's like, and it's, you know, as fun as it can be to connect with people and have conversations, after a while, that gets just a bit boring. And it's nice to have that immense variety in PR today, I think.
It is. And I like the word that you use, pester journalists, because we always, and I know because you've been in that space before, and I know
I've been the other side, yeah, very much so, yeah.
You have. So I'll say that it's a quid pro quo on both, but yes, you no longer have to only depend on media. The beauty is that you also have owned medium. You're also working on a LinkedIn and a website content, or creating your own videos or audio visuals on social media, right? So it's just burst into a huge sort of an opportunity, I would say, to be able to navigate. Yes, there's chaos, but there's also a method to the madness, and that's why you need experts to be able to show you the way.
Yeah, you are the media now.
We are the media. I mean, Sam Altman's example is a terrific example to show that, right? Once upon a time, I would have said Elon Musk, but I'm going to stick to Sam Altman for now.
Yeah, he's a popular figure for talking about stuff. I was going to talk all about some of your ideas for how you approach campaigns in a few months' time, because you've got a really interesting one you want to talk about with Minimalist as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Let's just run through a couple of little stories that we spotted around this week. And I don't know if there's anything that you particularly spotted too, which would be great if you want to talk about that. But the first one I spotted was about does social media actually work for PR, which is quite a sort of edgy question, really, because I think it does. But anyway, it was an interesting question raised by National Public Radio in the United States a few weeks ago in a report they did. And what they found was that in a series of studies, they discovered that posting your opinion on social media has apparently virtually zero effect in changing the views of others. So they looked at a study which used social validation signals like likes and retweets. And did that change results? No. No change again, apparently. People didn't care if others agreed with what you were saying or not. But what they did find was slightly different. If a person shares a personal opinion on social media and then gets lots of likes and shares, the views of the person posting it becomes more entrenched. They believe themselves more, in effect. Now, while studies like this are obviously very hard to quantify, of course, and I think it's hard to say there is a definite black and white issue here, there's plenty of arguments to say that actually posts do influence people if done right. If we take the report at face value, it kind of says that the only way to change opinions is to first of all, build your community, and then get the people that you have already kind of on side with you to say something and then get people to like that. So it's kind of preaching to the choir, preaching to the converted already. A bit like the sort of Apple community or any kind of organization which has developed a strong community. So what's your take on this? I mean, one of my thoughts immediately on this when I read this story was that they're talking about putting out one tweet, one opinion. And I think the power of PR is in storytelling over time. But what's your take on it, Kamal?
It's a very interesting study, and I was on the fence and I don't agree with it. Coming in from the experience that we work a lot with content creators. In fact, we were one of the early adopters of it 10 years back when it was just a growing community on Twitter. Instagram had not started. I think it started a couple of years later. You remember the awkward days, do you? If you don't, it's fine. But it's sort of
yes.
back in the day.
What is
right?
this thing? So, how does this work? Yeah.
yeah, like the word ASL came through and, you know, there's just so many different things about it. So coming back to content creators, I think they're a very, very intrinsic part of your media mix today. Simply because you've just taken it from a print or a digital news piece to a moving audiovisual piece is not necessarily deliberated by a paid exercise or a barter exercise or an organic exercise. The fact is that you've just changed the medium. The message is yet the same. So in what way are we sort of saying that it may have not? I am, however, in agreement with the social construct that gives you a lot of validation. There was a very interesting line that I did read and heard that entire report. It said that the person will get the validation in somebody who perhaps got 10 likes, suddenly goes viral, perhaps with 10,000 likes. That celebrity name can be daunting. But we're talking about a very, very small anomaly here. The larger construct is that it is very much part of the system. It is here to stay. Today, virtual influencers are there. I mean, we have, for example, an e-commerce platform here called Myntra. They created their own virtual influencer, and it's doing very, very well. So I think it's, I don't agree with that study. However, the degree of influence is what one needs to say. You just don't have to do a tick mark job that, hey, I need to get 50 creators to do it. Mm. Your nano and small ones have more engagement, more relatability. Also in India, we don't have TikTok. So for us, the larger media is actually YouTube, Instagram. So it's a very, very interesting way of getting your message across there.
I mean, how much? Because I kind of get the feeling that one of the inspirations for this report was probably shouting matches about politics, right? And you get a lot of people on, I mean, obviously Twitter is the place you think of naturally, who are going to go, oh, they're wrong. And they often don't include any information and they think they're going to change people's minds. And it just feels like that kind of thing, I can understand why that's not effective. But when you come back to PR and you're talking about a story or you're talking about an influencer who is following something over time. I mean, there was a really interesting one we had a couple of episodes back where they were talking about a health influencer who had got some kind of skin condition. And when she got this particular product from the PR person we were talking to, she was using it over a series of months and trying it out. So it was a story that developed over time. Rather than just going, you must use this because it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
she
no,
was telling a story that engaged people. And I feel that it's not so much the medium that is the problem. It's how that message is delivered.
Let me put a story to you right now and tell me how you feel about it, Richard. What if I was to take you in an ancient city of Banaras in India and got you to capture the essence of the first rain in a bottle and bottle that fragrance for you and send it to you with your name? Now, aren't you intrigued to be able to want that? Yeah.
Exactly.
Versus saying, hey, here's a fragrance. It's called Kastur and lovely PR package that I got.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. But, it's a story.
And there is a brand who did this, by the way. I am not making this up. This is actually true. And it's doing extremely well because of the beautiful storytelling that it used in an audiovisual medium. I think consumer brands largely, I think B2B would be restricted more onto, say, a YouTube or a LinkedIn, and mediums can be discussed. But I think largely when you use an audiovisual medium for tourism or travel places or food to eat, don't we all before our trips go and Google or look at YouTube on what are the 10 places to look at when you're going for a holiday? And there have been places which have said, please stop coming because you're getting so much influx of people coming often looking at a video, right? So definitely there's something that moves. I don't know from a perception point of view, is it quick? Like you said, it's consistency. It's not done at a one video level. You have to make it happen over a period of time till it becomes a conventional piece of messaging that you cannot avoid. It then becomes your must-do.
Because one of the things that slightly concerns me as well is, or not concerns me, but it's the way that I think marketing has changed. You know, this whole idea of having the one brand statement that you just keep repeating. I just feel that now in this world where it's saturated with these one-line brands, it's got to be storytelling that takes us into the future. I don't know. Do you agree?
It's completely agree. Think of it like, do you remember your granny's flavorful food when you were growing up, right? You don't know what she made, but the storytelling is the waft of the fragrance that comes in. When you're eating it, that thing lingers in your mouth. That's exactly what the whole communication standpoint is. And it does not have to be restricted to just advertising or PR or radio jingles anymore. It's sort of the central message, but it has to be customized to your target audience. You're right. The same message cannot be going to everybody because your audiences are so diverse today.
One of the things I said at the beginning was I love the fact that at last I'm talking to someone who's not in America and Europe. Do you find there are any particular... Well, there must be. There must be differences in how you tell a story where you are compared to, I don't know, the USA or Britain or France. You know, every single country has got slightly different nuances. But do you find... Have you noticed any sort of differences?
Lots of them. So... Unlike a lot of other countries or our counterparts or friends, when we meet them, you don't have a central language. You do use English quite a bit, but we call it India and we call it Bharat. Bharat standing for the Hindi term on it, which is the way you use Hindi, which is the language, and for the many, many, many languages. We actually customize the same message, translate that into several languages when we need to reach out to the hinterland. And that's one way of communication. The second part that we do is understand and localize it. So while we will be, there will be a macro strategy in place, we will not use the same language in the north of India or the south of India. It gets into that customization, which is beautiful. Let me give you an example. Currently, we're working with a beauty store who we want to encourage people to come because they get some sort of very interesting product line. My customized message in the north is talking in Hindi, whereas in the south of India, we're using the local languages like Malayalam or Telugu to talk the same way. So it's beautiful and diverse. It also means it's customized at scale. So the strategy used is very, very well planned and at scale.
I was going to say, but how do you do that then? Because all languages have subtle differences. So if you're trying to get a message, a specific message, you've got to get the new, not just say it in a different language, not just go to Google Translate and put in the phrase. You've actually got to think about the nuance of the phrasing and the language and the structure that you're using, haven't you?
Yes, and there's an entire ecosystem of people who we partner with to do this because it cannot be, for example, if you ask me, to translate the same thing in French, and if I don't speak that language, I don't think that language. So I don't know if the literal translation is going to be the right one. So there's an entire ecosystem of people, which is feet on street, who will actually do that for you, check it for you, and implement that for you. It's a beautiful, fun, and approach that gets into play. It's a beautiful method to the madness.
That's fantastic. And how do you communicate then the nuance that you want to get? Because coming back to this whole point about PR being a subtle story, it's about triggering emotions. How do you ensure that you're delivering that when you don't speak that language?
You have the right people placed there to be able to do that for you. Because individually, you can tailor a macro message. And then you've got to funnel it to the experts who are from those places to be able to communicate it. But of course, your larger part is done in either in English or in Hindi, which is understood. And your own media itself can be bilingual. So that's a very interesting part. It, of course, depends on the customers or the stakeholders you're talking to. But that's a very distinctive difference in how things are done in India. Second, the amount of publications we have is humongous. We're the most populous country by now. So yes. Keeping that in mind, our mediums are so beautiful. You have Instagram-only publication. You have YouTube-only publication. OTT has taken over, so there is a television difference, which earlier was completely changed. As communication agencies, you'd be surprised we're also doing OTT integration. We're getting our brands onto Netflix shows to be able to be seen in a particular way and build that narrative. So if I have to just sum it up simply, it's moved from press relation, thank God, to very connected mediums to say, hey, what I want to say, what are my four top stakeholders? Each stakeholder is consuming what media? Now let's pick the mediums for it. And then it just makes it so much more clearer.
It's fascinating. God, I'd love to talk about that for hours. Let's move on to the next story, though. It's no longer enough to just count column inches, according to Pan Communications' Mark Nardone. In a recent interview with PRNewsOnline.com, he told PR News that he is focused on how they and other PR firms will need to stop thinking about just being top-of-funnel marketers and instead show how the use of stories is carrying people through the funnel. That's the key thing here. It's not just about getting people in the top. It's about getting them all the way through the journey. For example, do people still remember the story that drew them in when they come out the bottom of the funnel? Are they more loyal when they come out? Are the stories PR people telling getting people to the right part of the website or to the right part of the business? It was a fascinating chat and worth checking out. But it does raise the question that it's simply not good enough anymore to just think about just getting that press coverage and getting people in the top of the funnel. I think this is actually about modern PR, isn't it? Again, it's about thinking far bigger than just press.
I'm absolutely with you. And by the way, I was very impressed with Mark's interview. I did write to him immediately on LinkedIn after saying that I think it's a fascinating way of looking at B2B communication. A lot to learn from that. And thank you for putting that out on your piece. It just gave such a beautiful perspective on things. But to answer your question, I think while the larger and macro thought is great, it's going to be tricky to measure it. Yeah. Loyalty is something, or the stickiness is a want, and it's definitely something there. I don't think only PR or only sales or only employee branding in isolation will help. But yes, each one does contribute a significant amount to be able to make that happen. And I also feel my take on this is it begins inward. As an organization, you have to be inwards out. You start with your employees. If they are house proud, they take that ambassadorship outside. Same as with brands. I don't know how much of the Indian market you follow. For example, there's a brand, it's a legacy house called the Tatas. Tatas are known for trust. So you know, even if it's a regular product like salt, you will pick that up because it stands for trust. They've built that over years of loyalty, stickiness. There are tons of newer brands coming in, and we can talk about minimalist when we get there, how they're trying to captivate a certain audience. So I think when you combine the whole owned, earned, and paid medium together, when marketers realize that PR is now a combination of these three and not only earned, you really partner with companies and it's not a plumbing job then. It's a partnership job that's done.
One of the thoughts for me is I think PR often within organizations is thought as being a top of funnel thing. And now where the whole story, you know, it comes down to customer support. It comes down to what that latest marketing leaflet was sent out. It comes out to the production line. It comes out to the person delivering the parcel at the front door. It does feel to me more that the PR has a perspective on things that it can apply across a business. It shouldn't just be pigeonholed anymore as being that grabbing some people so that once it then hand them over to us and we'll get on with it as a business. Now, I feel that there needs to be a bit of a mindset change within organizations to understand that.
I think PR does need its own PR right now. It needs to have an image that it's not only earned anymore, and that's about connected messaging. To be able to do everything, like for example, on consumer brands, like you said, you have a window into what a display may look like, which can get grammable to get viral. Or it may be that LinkedIn message that you're putting to make somebody look good because he needs to be an opinion leader. So it's a gamut of different things. I think instead of really talking at PR conferences, we need to be seen at marketing conferences and talking
yes,
about
yes, I was saying this the other day. Yeah, I love this. We're in total agreement there. Yeah, there's no point talking to the preaching to the choir, talking to the people that already understand it. No.
Yeah, I would rather talk to brands. I would rather talk to people saying how this is going to benefit you, because your team sizes are only getting leaner, and that's the truth. And if you're getting leaner, you need experts who are not going to be in-house, but are going to be consultants who have a much 30,000 feet view of various brands happening and will give you the expertise on it. That's a mindset change. Now, whether you accept it or not, we are here to stay.
Okay, so what... I mean, let's not try and solve the whole issue of PR's PR problem right now in this exact moment. But I mean, talking at conferences, we can certainly do that. What else do you think could be done then to try and get the message out? Because I also kind of feel when you're talking to people that PR is by some people is seen as being something of the past. It's being seen as being something that was just to do with press relations in the past. And it needs that whole rebranding. So what do you think needs to be done? I mean, you talked about the fact that you're very much an integrated agency, aren't you? You're doing all these different things. And a lot of PR agencies now, or some of them are dropping the word PR and just calling themselves comms agencies to try and get past this kind of barrier. So what do you think needs to be done to kind of rehabilitate the phrase PR?
And what do you want this? You're right. We dropped the word PR, not that we used it, but like many others, the idea was to call it a communications consultancy, because PR in the sense of PR is looked at a very myopic view. They think that when it's PR, it means earned media, press relations. However, you want ideas, you want strategy, you want everything, but you will not sort of look at that from a compensation point of view or from a mindset point of view. Then why ask for it? Some simple word, I don't have an image at all on it, but I think we just need to talk to a larger set of people who understand the benefit of it, and hence not look at people who are going to be not changing their mindset. And that is really what we also inwards need to do, to be able to be integrated. And you don't have to scale up. You can step up and sell yourself better.
Yeah, we basically need a PR story about PR to sell PR. Gets very meta, that, doesn't it?
It is. How do you measure that? Hey, I built your reputation. How are you going to measure that in exact values, right? And which is why one of the most archaic things that we did as an agency was to get rid of AVE, or that whole system of calculating it. We use very, very top-end AI models to do our reports, and so well-received. So it's out there. It's about acceptance and changing that. We try to get rid of the dinosaur right now.
Yes, exactly. You are listening to the Public Relations Podcast with myself, Richard Midson, and Komal Lot, the founder of Toot Consult. Komal, just very quickly, how can people get hold of you?
LinkedIn is the best way. I'm very receptive there.
Go on, give the username as well. Most people are listening to this show are listening to it on audio, so we need to make sure that you say where they can get hold of you.
Sorry about that. Okay. You can get hold of me on my LinkedIn, which is KOMALLETH, Komal.
Oh, I think we dropped out just a moment there. Go on, say that one again.
You can get hold of me on LinkedIn at KOMALLETH. That's Komal Lot.
Wonderful. And if you're listening to this on any podcast app, you'll also find that link as well in the description too. Right, one more story before we start talking about a campaign that Komal's been working on as well. And this one is, it was an interesting dinner that took place with PR and marketing heads organized by Axios. Several things came up, but one that struck me was this. They reported in their newsletter that strategic silence is likely to lead the strategy of business leaders and brands in 2024. Is that right? Well, they also quoted Salesforce head of public affairs, Margaret Taylor, saying, "You can't make a business plan without being able to communicate it. You can't respond to the needs of society around you or prep for geopolitical challenges without being able to communicate well." So what should be the approach for this year? Should it be the year of silence, or should people be speaking up? I mean, I'm not surprised at this kind of thing. I mean, it comes up all the time, doesn't it? But I'm not surprised that this comes up, because we have had a few, particularly sort of politically motivated things this year that have come up, particularly like with Nike, obviously, is the big one that everyone was talking about with their campaigns and how that kind of led to a bit backfiring. But we've had also beer campaigns as well with Bud Light. We've had all these sorts of things. So it's understandable that brands are getting nervous. So what do you think is the message then for 2024?
What's the point of having a message when you cannot communicate it, right? That's exactly what it is. How many reams of paper you're going to write, how many advertisements and billboards you're going to say without really talking about it. That also is an audiovisual medium at the end of the day. So it's going to be your, in my opinion, of measured thinking, more strategy than tactics. The tactics will emanate from the strategy, but you don't have to do a tick mark job of everything. I think it's going to be made to measure, literally about that. And that's what, in my opinion, will lead to better efficacy.
I mean, do you think the problem is in terms of the amount of personality that people are giving? Because I think it's very easy to retreat to your single line brand statement again, isn't it? Because it's safe to say, Nike, just do it. Because, well, how do you argue with it? It doesn't really say anything particular, does it? It doesn't have an opinion. It doesn't divide anyone. But it just feels like, again, in this day and age, like we were saying earlier, that we've got to be telling stories because everyone is able to get their message out there now. AI, as you're mentioning, is going to be able to pump out standard marketing messages at a level we have never seen before. So in order to stand out, you've got to focus on story. And that means taking a little bit of a risk. But you think of in America, particularly the classic Wendy's campaigns, where they got really edgy, didn't they, on social media? And they started taking the mick out of people, even their own customers. And it's how far do you go in 2024 when people are so much more sensitive than they used to be, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely with you. And I can talk about the Indian market here, wherein there is a high amount of sensitivity because we're such a diverse population across ethnicities, across languages, religions, politics. It can spiral up and down very quickly before one realizes it. So one does question that how much is too much or what not to say and what to say to please a larger audience. I think we've reached that stage with AI coming in, automation coming, like you said, to be able to tailor messages that really resonate with the stakeholders who you want to talk to. Your customers are very diverse. So for example, I may actually resonate more with somebody who's in a metro city than somebody who perhaps was in college with me, but is not in India anymore. My likelihood of having commonalities and habits, food, travel, etc., could be more assured to that. So my messages will be tailored towards that. I'll give an example. There's a sports brand. They have the ability to be able to get a brand ambassador, do the regular hikes. But there's an entire evolving community that people are reaching out to, which has stickiness. For example, we manage Victoria's Secret. One of the key communities we want to talk to is the pink community, which does its leisure. We've identified a really fun community called Sisters Who Sweat. These are a group of footballers, women, who will come every Saturday, 6 a.m., and play football. For me, that's a integration to do because it's getting me very targeted audiences. That's actually going to be able to work with my brand. So this is just an example of how communities today across and micro communities are actually deepening and brands can resonate with them.
Yeah, it's the importance of targeting. But it's interesting, you say about the huge diversity of people that you've got in India. So the danger you always have when you target a specific group is that your message is heard by another group that doesn't like it. So how do you play that game in India?
Well, that happens all the time. So in our film, like for, I don't use the word Bollywood, but I say Hindi films or films that are happening, this does happen quite often because there will be somebody who will be offended or somebody who's, sensitive about it, etc. It gets into a plea, it gets into court cases, it makes headlines. Large part of it does help the movie because it gets you in the news. But sometimes they just have to squash it and work around it. But this does happen all the time. And you can't please everybody. You're not coffee. You just can't.
So is it kind of almost an accepted part of doing business that there's going to be a, a controversy with almost anything in a way.
I'll be controversy, but yes, you can't make everybody happy because somebody will always have a sensitive opinion, right? Yeah. But what you do is try and stay true to your DNA and core. And if your DNA and core is what's coming out, I think people see a reason to it, or you just don't pay attention to that enough that you need to spur it. You just have to take that chance. It happens all the time.
So do you find then that your clients are more willing to take risks than perhaps an American market where people are terrified to say anything now? Because there's almost an acceptance of like, well, it's going to happen anyway.
No, I don't think we take it for granted. I think we won't borderline there. But we will definitely try and tailor make our messages that is not going to be offending any community or doesn't have any political or religious thread to it. I think that's something that we definitely would want to steer away and keep away from, because it's just not going to be healthy for anybody. But when we do work with consumer brands, etc., we definitely will double check everything. However, if there is a crisis that implodes, we are also prepared for it, and we do have a module that we will need to get into that happens in.
Yeah. So do you have, within India, the same... there have been various surveys saying about how much, in America in particular, the market is demanding organizations have political opinions now. So what's the sort of feeling in India? I mean, are organizations... is it the same there, that people are saying, we want you to have an opinion?
No, I don't think that's not sort of
good.
Pure. We're a very free country there in that sense, and we definitely do not adhere to it. In fact, we have a policy in place which allows you to have your own opinion and personal view on things. And these are very well embedded in our corporate organization manual.
Yeah. And people don't want an organizer. Yeah, that's really interesting, because that's very different to the American market, that is. Oh, it's so fascinating to hear about this.
Thing to know about that. We do have diversity and inclusion, though. I think D&I is a very, very integral part today. It's a growing community. It's something that is very much the need of the... I'm glad the country is opening up to it. And we're targeting, for example, our cosmetic brand. We work with a bunch of different people across sectors. And it's amazing that there's so much acceptance on it.
This is fascinating stuff. Right, let's talk about a campaign that you have been working on, because I love to hear about what people are up to and how they've planned it and organized it. But this is actually quite a big campaign. You've been working with Minimalist, isn't it? So tell people, first of all, that aren't aware of the brand, what it's about, and then tell us a bit about the campaign.
Lovely. It's one of my favorite brands that we worked and built at Tute. And it's a skincare brand. It's called Minimalist. It's from a city called Jaipur, which is the pink city of India. Two brothers, Mohit and Rahul, founded this. And they started during the pandemic, interestingly. They found a niche that there is a lot of skincare and love, and people weren't transparent about their label. They figured that was a problem solved that needed to be addressed. And they came up with a brand. The brand they come up with serum and sunscreen. So it's not a cosmetic brand that is straight application. It also means that you have to give it time to do it. How do you sell something that reads acid on your skin, energy, glycolic, etc., and tell people willingly, hey, put it? It's going to do you good.
This seems good for you, honestly.
Yeah, you must put this acid on your face, because conventional wisdom tells you acid is terrible. How can you put acid on your face, right? So I think it started with there from a problem solving, that how do you get people to accept that this is active and actually good for you, right? That was the larger problem. Their brand proposition of storytelling is beautiful. It's saying hide nothing, which basically means you pick up the bottle or anything, read the label and ask us any question. Now, how do you sort of bring this out in a market which is challenged by huge brands, which are on the shelf, which are in general trade, modern trade? People are used to buy things which they seen conventionally over so many years. And this is an online brand, what we call it D2C, which is direct-to-consumer brand. So how do you create the love for it? While they did a beautiful job of it on their social media, to simplify and dumb down what this acid means and what this can mean for your skin, what we did from a PR campaign point of view was, This was during the pandemic. Second wave in India was also very, very brutal, but we wanted to launch the product. So we created a virtual press conference, firstly, which was just like asking. It was not a regular press conference. Hey, this is the product. This is what we're launching. No. We got 15 people who were journalists, content creators, the works, KOL, which we call key opinion leaders, on a virtual thing and just said, ask us anything. Ask us anything you want on the morning. And it suddenly became a very depressing conversation about, okay, what is this? Why is it 0.3? What does this thing mean? What does this acronym mean? It just became such a fun conversation. It's like going to that chemistry lab and figuring why is it fizzing and doing that, right? It started having a lot of conversation and people interested. Second step, what we did, all the 50 who attended, we sent them a question set asking, what is your skin type? Each of the 50, we sent customized 3 bottles which suit them. They'd never seen that level of mass, sort of customized coming to them.
Yeah, personalized. And yeah, said, yeah.
And we said, why don't you come back to us after a month of using it and give us your opinion on what you thought? Good, bad, ugly, we will take it all. I think barring two, everybody had something very, very insightful to say that it worked. But two, it did because they had a condition that it didn't work in, but then it turned it around. And that's the insight that they took. So that was like expand a year and we sort of did the conventional. It's also a brand that doesn't use content creators, which is amazing. It's one brand that says, I'm not going to use content creators. I want real people doing. We actually shoot with real people. And that became the most compelling part of the story because people opened up saying, hey, I have acne. This has helped me. And this is really what it is. You can reach me if you want to ask me more questions. It just said, I mean, it really stood on the lines of trust me and I'm transparent.
There's two questions I want to ask because I want to carry on with this. This is so interesting. The first one was the press conference, right? One of the things about press conferences is often they are so managed, aren't they? You know, you've got the PR person who's kind of going, oh, we'll move on to the next question quick when something awkward comes up. You've got the spokesperson who is so well, you know, having worked in politics, so myself in PR, you know, I know what it's like. It's about getting those core lines and sticking to them. And we are not moving, whatever you say. So that was quite... That was quite risky almost to have a press conference where people can ask anything. And yet, another thing that immediately strikes me there is that at least then you're finding out what the journalists and people there want to know that they're going to cover. Because so often you can try and push out a message that a journalist doesn't give a damn about. And if you're actually letting them ask questions that they want to ask, that's more likely what they're going to do, isn't it? What they're more likely to give more coverage to. So I don't know. I'm rambling here. I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
It's absolutely good. Imagine, Richard, I call you over for lunch. There are 10 things on the table, but I say no to choose from the 3. You may not miss the other 7, but you want access to the 7, right? You don't want to be controlled. So I think a large part of the credit goes to our clients who are brilliant partners. We say that we're very confident of our product and we are happy to fail and learn. So if somebody points that out to us, we're happy to go back to the drawing board and come back with the solve. We will not let that message pass because we're too big. No,
that's the key thing, isn't it? It's that confidence in the product and confidence in saying we will improve it. We want the feedback, which is very different to what a lot of brands are prepared to do.
Absolutely. So I think it's a beautiful partnership. That's why, because they're happy to explore these edgier ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what sets it a little bit apart because you don't do the conventional. It's not so systematized and regimented, which gives us the avenue to play around. So I've only reached the second part of the campaign. We actually do more things after that, and it continues. If you're interested to know that.
Okay. Well, the next one I wanted to ask you about was you said about the fact that they used real people, not content creators. Now, obviously, the advantage with the content creator is they've got a pre-existing audience that you can tap into. So how did they work with people that were just ordinary people? Did they then use those people and market that through their own platforms? How did they approach that?
They marketed it through their own platform. That's absolutely correct. They started, when they sent out these samples or when people started buying them, they encouraged people to write back in. I think they had a steady pool of people who actually wrote to them because the product worked. And hence, from there, they took their permissions. We started shooting with them. So I think a large part is also the product was great, which is why this could happen. Absolutely with you. Yeah. And they did a phenomenal job, and they continue to do that on their social.
Okay, so tell us a bit more. So you got to that point then, they were using real people, and how did you take the story on from there? That was the kind of initial launch.
Because it was an online brand, and now the market had opened up, and people were wanting to know that why this brand does not have its own store, or why is there such a hoopla around it? They've gone international, they're available in the Sephora and the UK and the Middle East, everything. But where is this brand? Who are the people behind it? Because we kept it low-key. We kept it that way. So we did a first trip is experiential, which is an immersive, true to the brand DNA, which is called Hide Nothing, literally, over a very, very simple sundowner. No fuck, minimalist cocktail, minimalist setup, come and ask us anything. We just stuck to the brand DNA of doing that. We had over 30, 35 creators come on a sunny afternoon, blown away by the product, trying it, swatching it, talking to them. And the results have been very, very encouraging for us to continue doing these immersive experiences. So I think PR for us in this particular brand has given us the wings to be able to experiment right from content to creation to events. And now we continue to do a lot of stories around how the brand expansion is. And read your label. For us, the larger wisdom is get the story out, or please read your labels and question things. And that's going to be the next leg of our campaign for the next 2 years.
Love it. Getting people engaged in that one. So on the influencers one, that's interesting again, because so you're saying come along and ask us anything. I mean, what was the kind of the hook that you used to get them in, though? Because there's a lot of brands launching, as you say. So how did you kind of go to these people? Look, this is the one to pay attention to. What was that hook?
Did you mean the hook for the brand to engage with us, or you mean the hook the customer?
Yeah, so in other words, when you reached out to the influencers, what was the hook that made them go, oh, I've got to come to this event. This is the one I need to be at.
Relationships. That's why agencies exist.
Yeah.
One is to have a very, very steady and rock-solid relationship with them, because they know that we're not going to call them from an orbit brand. And it's not one brand that keeps sending packages. It's a brand that we converse to them about. So I think that is one way of doing things, which is a little bit more authentic instead of, I mean, sending gifts is not PR, right?
Yeah.
Talking about the brand is. And that's a huge difference, which really needs to sort of be addressed out there. Sending PR packages is not PR. And
then I love this whole angle about the, you know, we need to start reading the labels, because that's a very interactive thing, isn't it? It's not political, but it's almost saying, come on, we've got to do something together. And that bonds people into a campaign.
Absolutely. The storytelling that, hey, this is my sunscreen and done good for you, versus saying, hey, what does SPF mean? Do you even need your SPF worth this much for your skin? It's two different angles looking at the same thing. It just makes you ponder that what are you putting on your face? It's like you were eating cereal every morning when the nutritionist suddenly told you it's got sugar. How about you switch to another version on it, right? It just took that conventional wisdom to suddenly tell you that.
Yeah, I completely ignored that this morning when I got my cereal out because I don't want to think about it. But anyway.
When I would have mine, I would remember you.
Exactly. Make sure you check that label. So where do you think the campaign will go from here? I mean, what's the sort of next level for it now? And also the thing I love asking people is that because PR, the world, society is changing all the time, what do you think you learned from this campaign, which is perhaps newer compared to things that are done in the past?
Taking risks. You nailed it when you asked me in the beginning, what did we do? I think my partners or my clients took a huge risk in being able to trust us together to be able to do it. They're a well-funded company. And for them to be able to say, hey, we'll do it and you will do it. And I think we had a common goal on storytelling what the brand DNA is. It's going to only enable us to even think larger. So that's one. And I think this is true for every client, right? If you have a rock-solid partnership, which is sticky and loyal, I think the work coming out of it is a lot more beautiful than questioning each other, what are you doing? I'm paying you at the end of the month. What is this going to result in? When you don't have to answer that question and you focus on the work, it's beautiful. And that's really what shows and shines in every work we do. this brand's going to take over. And I'm very, very confident, not only because of the product, but because of their vision and thinking on how they look and approach things.
Yeah, it was a conversation we had a long time ago about sometimes you have to sack your client because it's just not going to work. And it's the hardest thing to do, but yeah.
This year, last year, 23, but complete your question and sorry, I answered.
Yeah. Well, no. I was fascinated. Obviously don't mention by name, but I mean, can you give us a hypothetical, even the sort of logic in your head, what you're thinking about? Because you just couldn't get the campaigns to work, was it? Or?
I think a couple of good learnings there. Partner with people who know their work. That's very, very important. When you have to sell your work to somebody who's not a subject matter expert in that, and then you have to, instead of working, you have to justify the job again and again. Walk away from that table. That table was not yours to sit on. That's one learning for us. Two, trust is very important. It's never a power relation for us. And that's how we treat and we would like to be treated. And when I say we, doesn't mean partners or agencies. I think people in general, right?
Yeah.
It's not a power relation. Calling for 25 agencies to pitch is a pure play power game. People are moving away from that. You need us as much as you need your other things to work. It's a very pivotal part of a larger cog. So I think it's best to sever a relationship on a healthy note or not when you know that it's strained. And I think either a conversation solves it or it doesn't. There is no third thing to it. So we did take some tough calls last year. Partnerships that have been with us over half decade. But I think in a larger set, it just opened doors to more nuanced thinking. Your team stay with you. They stick around. And for us, and for everybody, your employees are your first brand ambassador, no matter what.
Yeah. And then you're working with organizations like Minimalist who are prepared to try risking things and experiment and adapt to the modern world, isn't it? I mean, that's exciting.
Absolutely. And I hope that people get to experience these clients and partners, because not only does it make work so fulfilling, you're really sticking to doing something which is gold standard. And that gives you so much joy to be able to do what you do.
We could talk for absolute hours. We have just one final bit to do, which is the community bag. We have just one question this week, and these questions are ones that are sent in to me via LinkedIn. I always change them completely so that it doesn't identify who you are. So let's just ask this question quickly, and then we need to round up, because otherwise this would be like a Joe Rogan show. I would go on for hours talking to Komal. Right, so the question was, let me just read this. The problem for many in-house teams is that they have a lot of different questions. A lot of different messages that people want to get out. How do you pick the right message to focus on? My first thought on this, and I've said this many times on this show before, is that if you've got a bunch of different messages, the danger is you either end up trying to merge them all together into something that means nothing, or you end up trying to say them all, in which case journalists, communicators, whoever you're trying to get across to, don't know which to pick, could go off at different angles. And so you've got to come up with one clear message you're going to work on this time. You may drop it later, you may experiment with it, see how people react to it, but you've got to pick that one clear message. That's my answer on it. What about you, Komal?
I completely agree. I think, if somebody who gives you a brief or a message saying, I am this and, you've lost the second and, you really lost what you really stand for. We've moved, and I read your piece where you said it moved from like a 10-word headline to a 4-word headline. And we are in an era where our attention spans are 5 seconds to 6 seconds. So to be able to grapple with that, the minute you have your first and, it sort of slides down a slippery slope. Your messaging has to be, your core message can be dealt with, like an emotion or a thought. Let it sort of slide in into different messages depending on who you're sending it to. So I believe your messaging has to be customized. Your messaging has to be customized, and you need to be able to say it. And if there are many diverse opinions, which is why comms people exist, to be able to get that to one.
Yes, to try and make some sense out of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a large part of our job has become about fighting to be heard within a group of people who have many opinions. So it's a learning, it's a curve, and PR will get its due, or communications will get its due there.
Come on, it is so great talking to you, and it's so interesting getting such a different perspective on things today and such a new, fresh perspective as well. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm so glad we finally managed to find a time to organise it as well. Thank you so much. How can people get hold of you again? Make sure you say it out loud, though, for everyone listening on audio.
Thank you, Richard. It's been such a fun chat. I've never done this at this time, but I think it's the best thing done. anybody who wants to get in touch with us, we do work with a lot of global companies too. And you can reach me on LinkedIn on my company page, which is Cute Consult, or write to me directly on LinkedIn at Komal Lath. That's KOMALLATH.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. And I hope you will come on again at some point next year. Right. So for what's coming up next on the Public Relations Podcast, so we're going to take a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks. And then I'm going to be doing a few sort of one-off special features where I'm just going to be looking at particular campaigns or particular issues I'm going to focus on and be speaking to people about those. So a few little changes coming along. Let me know, as always, what you think about the show. Just like with Minimalist, this show can be adapted. So whatever you feel is giving you the most value, whether you feel it's about the campaign section, whether you feel it's about the little news stories that we're doing at the beginning of those discussions, whatever it is, let me know. You can always reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Richard Midson, MIDSON. Let me know what you like, because I want to make this show work for you and give the most value to you. In the meantime, though, until the next show, so I've got a bit of a special coming up next week, it should be. I hope you're having an absolutely wonderful week. I hope you're having a lot of success, and you're starting off 2024 with an amazing year ahead. I will speak to you very, very soon.